listening to a podcast of a program produced in 2014 as part of Aloud, a series of dynamic conversations, readings, and performances that take place in the Mark Taper Auditorium at the historic downtown Central Library in the heart of Los Angeles. These programs are presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles, which supports the Los Angeles Public Library. To support Aloud or learn about the entire podcast collection, please visit www.lfla.org/aloud.
Step into the real story of the Runaways through Evelyn McDonald's captivating tale in Queens of Noise, and you step into the snagged fishnets, as illustrated on the book's cover, of the intoxicating Los Angeles music scene of the 1970s, where a few young teenage girls were searching for their path through guitar riffs, deafening drum beats, and the sleazy, sexy seduction of the Sunset Strip. The Runaways were girls speaking to girls about girls, and their story began with a firecracker start, fueling them on tours around the country and abroad. Veteran music journalist Evelyn McConnell has also authored 4 other books on rock music and is a professor of journalism at Loyola Marymount. In Queens of Noise, she brilliantly paints the culture of the time, literary Los Angeles with its geographical maze as context for these runaways, marking their stamp on history and bending gender norms. Their flame would fizzle out just after 4 years, but their presence would light the stage for the future of female musicians who would later rise in their wake. Meanwhile, while the Runaways were playing their first club gig at the Whiskey A Go-Go in 1977, a lasting connection was being made at a poetry reading over in Venice, where X's John Doe was wooed by Exene Cervenka's words and invited her to join his band. X became one of the defining bands of the era, producing 5 albums in 5 years, 2 of which are included in Rolling Stone's top 500 albums of all time. "You knew that it was important because people were fighting it," said Cervenka of the band's impact. After a multi-year break, X reunited in 1997, and to this day, play live shows to sold-out audiences who esteem them as the best punk band to come out of Los Angeles ever. Vocalist Exene Cervenka sings the shadowy side of her city, her lyrics marking her talent as a poet and writer, her commanding presence and passion defining her as an indefatigable activist. Cervenka has played in other bands like the Original Sinners and the Antichrist, and has published work with the late Wanda Coleman and co-authored a book with Lydia Lunch. She and X will be playing a live show next week at the Whiskey A Go-Go celebrating their 50th anniversary. And in the early 90s, north of Los Angeles, up in the Pacific Northwest, a feminist music scene with a DIY sensibility was growing into a movement that was fueled by a desire to infuse the punk rock scene with more feminism while putting some punk into academics. Singer and songwriter Allison Wolfe and her band Bratmobile was one of the primary bands that contributed to an underground movement that united art, music, and activism to empower women. It was called Riot Girl, both music scene and genre, as well as a subculture that through fanzines, art, and activism, carved out a place for women's voice. From Bratmobile, Wolf went on to play in Party Line and Cool Moms. And as for Riot Girl, its impact on women and the world is irrefutable. Has anyone ever heard of Pussy Riot? Now it's time to make some noise. Let's welcome Evelyn McDonald, Exene Cervenka, and Allison Wolfe to Aloud at the Los Angeles Public Library.
Hi. Thank you, Maureen and Louise and the Los Angeles Public Library. Yay for public libraries. It's why we're all here. I'm Evelyn McDonald. This is Allison Wolfe. And this is Exene Cervenka.
Hi.
Thank all of you for coming. It's tremendous to have such a great turnout, and I also want to thank my brothers, Brett and Paul, who met Maureen on a cruise in Turkey this summer, which is part of why I think this happened. So, Who knows where the inspiration for things comes from. So this is a really momentous night for me. This is really one of the biggest nights of my life, to be honest. I'm very starstruck to be here with these amazing women, so I'm going to try to keep it cool. But when I was in college a few years ago, X was the heard music, not the unheard music. They were a soundtrack for my life and for my brother's life, so it's really amazing for us to be here tonight. They are here from Minneapolis. And, you know, X made this beautiful noise that came from the city where I actually was born, Los Angeles. So that really appealed to me. And of course, their music was just great, but also it was X-Zine that really drew me to this band, this incredible, powerful woman, interesting woman who had this great kind of twang growl and this cool look, and who wrote poetry. And as a young woman trying to find my own voice and identity as a writer, in a kind of alien Ivy League environment, she was just immensely inspiring to me. As a matter of fact, I got my first tattoo because she told me about a tattoo artist in Providence where I live. She has no memory of this.
No, I know which one that,
Rusty?
<Yeah.
laughs> Rusty Needles. Great name for a tattoo. Good name for a tattoo artist, right? and I have her book, Adulterers Anonymous, a collection of poetry that she wrote with Lydia Lunch. It's the first edition. She actually signed it for me many years ago. This was like my Bible in college. I carried it with me everywhere. Just really an honor to have her here. Songs, I was listening to Under the Big Black Sun, and lyrics like, you know, at night I get drunk and fly around, with just like a moment of escape for me in college. So really honored to have her here. And then and a decade later, when I had now spent some time as a woman working in the music industry as a music critic and writer myself, and encountered a lot of great experiences, but also obstacles. Lo and behold, comes these tremendous women out of Olympia in Washington, D.C., sort of expressing all the incredible anger and frustration, and also power and love that I wanted to feel in punk rock. And Alison Wolf was one of the tremendous spearheads of that movement with her band Bratmobile and her fanzine Girl Germs and the entire Riot Girl movement. It's really awesome to have us all here. And I think we're going to have a really good discussion. And one thing Maureen didn't mention in terms of the program for the evening is that after the Q&A, X-Zine is going to sing a song. Yes.
Good thing, I guess.
So you have to stick around. both of these women, to me, embody punk feminism, which is just something I'm really inspired by, the coming out of this do-it-yourself ethos that comes out of both feminism and punk, and how they came together for a number of different women. And they embody this. They are queens of noise, okay? So this phrase, queens of noise, that's the theme of tonight. This was actually a lyric from a Runaway song originally. It was actually from a song called American Night, which is one of the great lost Runaway songs from the first album that should have been a hit. Ironically written by a man, Mark Anthony. And then they liked the lyric so much, it was such a great phrase that they wrote a whole song. Again, a man wrote the song, Billy Bezo, wrote the song Queens of Noise, which then became the title of their second album. So some of the contradictions that were inherent in the Runaways, this all-teenage girl group from this great city of Los Angeles, dispersed throughout Los Angeles. One of the first all-female rock bands in which they played their own instruments, no guys, and they played this very aggressive music, played sexual music. Of course, Joan Jett went on to fame, Cherie Curry, Lita Ford. Lita Ford is playing tonight at the Whiskey, so you can have like a total Runaways night tonight. I wish I could go. I think I'm going to be like collapsed after this. And Cherie's going to be there. So it's a pretty special night tonight. So A little plug for them. So the Queens of Noise, to me, this concept embodies these sort of contradictions of, you know, royalty and also dissonance. So I'm just going to read a little tiny excerpt from my book, and then I'm going to... This is going to be the most I talk all night. I just want to set up the concept, and then I'm mostly going to ask these fine ladies to speak. But I did just want to sort of set the tone of what the book, Queens of Noise, the real story of the Runaways, is about, and this concept. So Queens of Noise is a cautionary tale of what can happen to girls on the cusp of womanhood who dare to put themselves in exciting but dangerous positions. It's a testimonial to the inspiration and insecurity of the trailblazer. It's a period piece about the music industry in the 1970s, the lingering machinations of the old-fashioned Hollywood star system, the decadence and decay of the Sunset Strip. The Runaways' glam rock inspired both the dawn of punk and the reign of hair metal. The band is simultaneously a link between the New York Dolls and X, and Led Zeppelin and Motley Crue. Queens is a fable of individuals trying to make sense of a country of changing norms, of girls raised to believe they could do what boys do, who then crashed into the wall of sexual harassment and discrimination. It's a parable of prodigal daughters leaving broken homes as well as happy homes to carve out new ways of being, of playing, of creating. And it's a story of how chemicals can distort individuals' ability to cope and lead to crime, violence, disease, and death. The Runaways were queens, yes, but of noise, of dissonance and disturbance, of not an inability, but a pre-punk unwillingness to harmonize. So that's the tone, so to speak, of the evening. So my first question, we'll sort of take this chronologically through time, talking about the Runaways, from who slightly predated Exene's own involvement in music. And so I wanted to talk, A, what Runaways' influence, pro and con, was on you, because there's actually a quote in the book that you said to Christine McKenna in 78, that the Runaways did nothing to advance the status of women performers, which I think there can be an argument for, though you did say Joan Jett was very important. Yeah. And then also, just in general, what did punk provide for you as an outlet that maybe poetry hadn't, or that other things hadn't?
The Runaways is an interesting moment, because it was kind of like a moment where things turned for women. But what I was saying earlier makes sense to me. It's like women always have to reinvent women every time they do something. So Fanny in the 60s, Etta James, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, who really invented rock and roll guitar, and nobody even knows who she is. Every generation of women have to start over from scratch. They don't get to build on previous women because they get lost to history. So as far as that quote about the Runaways, you know, that was me being, you know, me. of course, I was friends with Joan at the time. The thing is, though, that it's true and it's not true. It's true that they didn't advance women, but is that because they didn't try to, or is that because what they did wasn't important? More important as the days go by, probably. Mm-hmm. More important now than they were then.
Right.
And more people are going to, we have, like, Alice and I met at Girls Rock Camp, and that right there is... You know, Girls Rock Camp came out of the Runaways, came out of all this kind of stuff. So, you know, I thought back then, though, that women shouldn't use sex at all. And the first time I saw the Runaways, John Doe and I, we got in free to see them at the Starwood. And it was probably 77, I think we were thinking, right? And it was apparently the corset night. And I was blown away that they were so good and that they played so well. And I just thought they were great. You know, I thought they were fantastic. But I didn't like it that the Kim Folley element, and that they had to, like, put their underwear on the outside to be... I mean, if you're playing all the instruments, why do you still have to wear your underwear on the outside?
So, yeah. Of course, it was the woman who wasn't playing an instrument who felt the need to do that. It was Cherie Curry, famously wore bustier and stockings on stage, you know, before Madonna, before Vanity. So anyway, she was a groundbreaker.
Singing is an instrument.
Yes, I'm sorry. Sorry.
Sort of.
And both of our singers, actually. didn't have an addition, an external instrument besides a mic.
Right.
So, but Allison, for you, in Olympia, they had this phrase, punk rock dream come true, right? So, and the Bratmobile covered Cherry Bomb, and you have a lyric about the Jonas Jet around, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you look back on the Runaways' legacy, and then what is the punk rock dream come true for you?
Well, I think for me, people like Joan Jett, Runaways, and then also Go-Go's, X, a lot of bands were anything that could hear about. And there wasn't a whole lot because, like Xene was saying, a lot of your history is erased from you. You know, mm-hmm. if it's not written, then you don't know about it, or it's almost like it doesn't exist. I mean, now people don't realize how lucky you are with the internet, and we didn't have that. So just kind of scratching and trying to find history and find the things that you can relate to is hard. And especially when I was like in middle school and stuff, I mean, yeah, you heard about I Love Rock and Roll, and that's kind of the era that I was. So I just have memories of being in the girls' locker room every day at school, and all the girls would sit there and sing I Love Rock and Roll over and over and over again. And also, like, We Got the Beat over and over and over again, and stuff like this. So, I mean, to me, those were huge kind of feminist influences on me. And I was the oldest in my family, so I didn't have, like, an older brother or sister to kind of pull me into, like, cooler stuff even or more alternative stuff. Mm-hmm. But my best friend's older brother had a truck, and he was driving up to Seattle to see X and Nina Hagen, and he put us in the back of the truck, and we had to ride in the rain up to Seattle in the cold, in the winter, in the back of a truck so we could go see you guys for $350. I remember that's how much it cost to get in. It was awesome. And that was more alternative, but, you know, it took someone just taking us there and putting us there and saying, check this out. And it was such a huge influence on me.
Right,
really.
And so seeing Xene and seeing Nina Hagen, what was that like?
Well, it was amazing. I mean, I didn't know what to do, so at first I sat back in the seats and far away, and I didn't wear glasses then, so I actually couldn't really see, but Nina Hagen, she opened.
You could hear.
She opened too, and she had this huge red wig on like this or something, and so I thought, wow, that's cool. But then after she played, I'm like, I can't believe I'm just sitting here. I feel like I'm missing something. So then my friend and I got wise and ran up to the front for X, and we were like dancing around, and everyone was whatever. Moshing and stuff. And it was so great and it was so exciting. But yeah, I felt like there was something I could relate to. I mean, I just played clarinet in band, but still, I could relate to that, just seeing you. And then we had to get in the truck and ride in the back in the rain all the way back.
So one of the things that inspired me about the Runaways and made me want to write about them was this notion of all girls in a band, and also just seeing the vintage videos of them, which you can see on YouTube now, which is really, really great, and the power that they had. And to see young to teenage girls interacting like that in public. And Sandy West said a great thing, the drummer for the Runaways, before she died, about comparing that they were like a football team, right? And this notion of women cooperating. And in a Riot Girl, there was always the phrase "support girl love," which I really loved. That concept of, you know, I think women are taught to compete with each other so much. Xene, you were the only woman in X. Mm-hmm. How was that? And then you also did this collaboration with Lydia, and you later did the Bohemian Women's Political Alliance.
I've worked, you know, the thing about LA punk that was so great was, first of all, there was a Hollywood scene, there was an East LA scene, and they merged together, and it was a great moment for everybody in the city, as far as I'm concerned. There was all kinds of people in that scene. There were so many women involved in punk. Mm-hmm. And even if it was people who weren't in bands, the women who were part of the scene were just as important, no matter what they were doing. They didn't even have to have a fanzine. They didn't have to sing a song. They just had to show up, and it was just power. And so everyone was welcome in that scene. And so there wasn't any sexism, racism, homophobia, none of that. No ageism. Everybody, you could be 60, you could be 14. It didn't matter. But everybody still did things that were like kind of sexist or homophobic sounding now would be like politically incorrect. Like people would say like black fag or circle Jews or, and they would say that like children, like in back in those days, like they would make jokes, but that was people to each other, right. You know, and it would be like, you know, like little bratty kind of things, like Pat Smear from the Germs. He was the brattiest brat, you know. But it was just innocent, like kids just that felt abandoned. Most of those kids in that scene were pretty much abandoned, a lot of them, by their families. It was the first like real like suburbia divorce, drugs on the table when you wake up before school, so you do some and go to school kind of thing. It was the skateboard era, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was, everybody was an outcast. So women being an outcast, it was like, what are you complaining about? You know, it's like, you know, I'm 14 and I'm homeless and you're complaining because you're a girl. No, that didn't happen. So, but the funny thing was, I didn't notice, I was married to John through the beginning of X and I was the only woman in X, but the punk scene was incredibly welcome, open-minded, and it was just a beautiful, beautiful thing. The hardcore scene, not so much towards women, but that's their own. That's a whole different story. It was fine being a woman back then. It was great, and I really thought that it wouldn't be a constant rebuilding every year of women in music. It would be just like we would build on everything, and pretty soon it would be half women and half men, like it should be, mm-hmm. right? And, of course, it's not, because women, it's a lot easier to be a naked cheerleader than to learn to play bass. It just is, you know. And and now in music, of course, you have, like, nothing but Whores of Babylon everywhere you look, and that's it. So when people ask me, a lot of people ask me, is it better for women now, and didn't Madonna make everything okay? And isn't it great that there's all these women like Taylor Swift, we were talking about Adele, there's a bunch of those people, but I don't know any of their music, but, and they are, but the reason that they're respected is because they're doing really well commercially, because they sell millions and millions of records. Like, Lady Gaga only sold this many, but that same time last year, Katy Perry sold this many, and then that other, Miley Cyrus, she sold this many, and then this person sold this many, and Beyonce sold more, and that's all they talk about, and first of all, none of them are actually singing. They're lip-syncing, and there's women, young girls, who have gone to concerts and never yet seen a live performance. Mm-hmm. They've seen dancing. Mm-hmm. But you know, I was thinking about soul music, because you can have a great mm-hmm. voice, and this is always, I wasn't a great voice singer. I was always just like, I just did whatever I thought would be, felt good, and whatever I wanted to do, I did. But the thing is that having a great voice doesn't mean shit. Everybody can sing. Everybody in the world can sing. And some people have greater voices than others as far as like tonality and whatever mm-hmm. and pitch and all that. That's fine too. Good for you. Everybody's got a talent. Multiple talent. We all have talent. But that isn't the same thing as having a soul. That isn't the same thing as having life experience. That isn't the same thing as emotion. That is not the same thing as blowing someone away with your just that you're so powerful because of what you're feeling and how you're expressing it. And so I think everybody's missing out on that, because we're getting into this transhuman period where it doesn't matter if you're a woman or a man anymore, as long as you're the thing that they manufactured and the thing that people will buy. Justin Bieber, is he a boy or a girl? I don't know. And I don't mean that in any way, you know, in any way that's like, you know, sexual like identity. I just mean it doesn't matter anymore if you're a boy or a girl. Right. Younger the better, whatever, but they just want to market and create these things, these creatures, to just shove out there into people's faces and let these people go off the rails, you know, like crazy because they can't handle it, you know. And I know there's like the whole drug thing too, and alcohol thing that in the punk era and the rock and roll history, but nowadays I can't imagine. Can you imagine being a multi-millionaire like song like creature, whatever they are, and you know, you do your like your steps and your choreography, and then it's like they probably have so many drugs for these people. You know, I mean, they don't have to go right. get drugs from their friends in the alley or anything. They have to just I'm sure all those famous women have everything they could ever want, whatever they need to keep that thing going, keep that machine running. They just get fed, you know. So It's almost like women in music now is not even the same animal as the Riot Girl days. Well, any of this, you know, it's like way beyond now. It's like, I'm sure there's girls somewhere playing music that we haven't heard of besides these other creatures. But.
There are. And actually, I know that Allison is goes out in the scene a lot and knows some of the good bands and DJs sometimes. But you were also very politicized in the late 80s, early 90s. Because, you know, for all the accomplishments that the Runaways did and that happened in the punk era, there wasn't necessarily a sense of political organizing until really Riot Girl kicked that off. So think back. Like, what were the motivations to form all girl bands and to have these meetings?
Well, I mean, I was raised by a radical lesbian feminist, and so I already had that kind of those notions, but she was, you know, really second wave feminist, and I think I kind of took a lot of that stuff for granted. But I think more and more I just started seeing, like, well, how does that translate into my life now and what's going on now and what's going on around me now, and trying to figure out a way to rebel a little bit against that, but then keep what's important from that, like stay feminist, but update it and have it speak to me. I was very much influenced by Kathleen Hanna, who had moved to my town maybe the year before or something, and I saw her with her shaved head just on the city bus every day, and she was always like, she looked so angry and intense at everything. I'm like, who is this girl? And I finally kind of figured out who she was, and we eventually met and got kind of networking with Toby Vail and Olympia and all these people, and these girls were talking about getting girls together and playing together and writing together and talking about politics together and our lives, and it really spoke to me. And I think what was going on also is grunge in the Northwest was getting really big, and we were friends with a lot of these bands, and it was exciting in a certain way, but it was just kind of a new way for all these guys to dude out a little more, but with long hair or something. It was just, you know, in a gravelly voice or something. So it just sort of seemed like dudes with a new package or something.
Well, so to speak.
Yeah.
That may be what Xene was talking about with the gender bend.
So I don't know. And so while it was kind of fun and whatever, we're just like, how do we fit into this? And actually, we have something to say, and can we say it? And in Olympia, Washington, there was a lot of DIY and people just singing about anything, doing the dishes or whatever, and you didn't have to have a beautiful voice, you didn't have to be a professional musician, and that also really inspired me. And so I kind of thought, well, maybe we can piece this together, and maybe I can do something too, and I can be part of something. But I couldn't have done it without the support of other women in the scene, and without a real politicized approach as well. So I think in some ways it was a reaction to grunge. But the whole point of Riot Girl really was to make the punk rock scene that we were involved in more politicized and more political, and I guess less sexist and more feminist. But also to kind of have feminism, which seemed really academic to us, it didn't really speak to us in our language, to make that more punk rock and just kind of more streetwise or something.
Right, right. And I mean, Riot Girl was so such a great idea and so successful that, I mean, I know in New York, where I was living, well, we had Riot Girl in New York, but we also started an organization called Strong Women in Music that was a number of women working in the music industry. You were doing the Bohemian Women's...
And WAC. Right.
And the Women's Action Coalition, yeah. And Women's Health, all that second wave. Mm-hmm. Wave feminist stuff, which, you know, I think we see now happening, strangely having spread to Russia and Eastern Europe and France with Pussy Riot and Femmes. But what happened? I guess, you know, what happened to both that early punk energy of equality and everybody being able to participate, you know, where did that go? Because you sort of intimated about how it changed with hardcore. Mm-hmm. And also
Well, I think Riot Girl is a real natural progression out of the punk movement, because it all started out very egalitarian and everybody was even, but then pretty soon it was like the women went back underneath the surface, and then the grunge thing, very male but very feminine at the same time. So the riot girl was a natural thing. Like, well, if women are going to get lost in the shuffle here, and it's not even reactionary. It's just a natural way of looking at things to do what you did. Not, it's not like, well, we're doing this because blah, 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 blah. It's just, this is a great idea no matter what the rest of the world's doing. But I think that was a natural thing because you can't just float around like as, you know, women in a scene like that. There's not enough support. So, yes, that's a great idea to get women together in groups. The problem with groups, male, female, or whatever, is there's usually like personality issues and stuff like that. So that's always hard to maintain. But I think there's just, it's also because people want, you know, like the sugary sweet corn syrupy version of food rather than the lettuce in the backyard food, which is more like what we were doing, you know. Mm-hmm. That's like a homegrown garden or something. And then what people want is just, you know, fast food. And so, you know, it's just, you know, it's just the society, the culture. But
do you think that it's particularly hard for women to that continue to work together? And I mean, that's, you know, part of the story of Queens of Noise is how quickly the band fell apart, and mm-hmm. you know, to this day, are in, can't speak to each other.
Well, let's talk about where I met Allison was when we volunteered for Girls Rock Camp LA. This summer will be 2 years, I guess. That to me was like the miracle. That was the best thing, one of the best things I ever experienced, because he had like, what, 70 girls, and they were like 7 or 8, maybe to 17, I think, roughly, right? Mm-hmm. And you had 40 women. Wow. So that's a lot of women, right? And a lot of people would make jokes about that, you know, like they'd women be fighting or what drama. There was never drama. There were no fights. There was no jealousy. There was no political bullshit. The girls were treated like really respectfully at all times, and they were mentored, and they were, it was all about creating, what is it, you know, like through music, it's like, you know, self-respect and empowerment.
Self-esteem.
Empowering young girls through women. Mm-hmm. I mean, through music, through women. Both, true. But anyway.
True.
No, it's true. When I got empowered by the girls. And so the thing is, yes, groups can exist like that. And that was the smoothest, largest group of people I've ever been in. And I cannot tell you how impressed I was by that group of people. And they deserve support. And they're all over the world. Anyway, that is, to me, Riot Girl led to Girls Rock Camp, which started mm-hmm. in Portland, mm-hmm. Girls Rock Camp, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. With a woman who did her college like thesis or something. Wouldn't this be great if there was a group of women who mentored a bunch of girls, and it was like nonprofit, and they all learned to play rock and roll in a week, and they wrote mm-hmm. songs. So to me, that is the direct thing of Riot Girl right there. And that's how you get it more focused, right? You build on it, and you know, like I said, you got to build from scratch, but there's a little building going on generationally, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
And you know what? In a couple of years, all those girls, and they already have been for 15 years now, mm-hmm. they're all going to be, you know, doing great in life because of that experience, not just in music, but because they have self-esteem. And that's very hard for women to come by these days. Always has been. I don't know what the question was, but to me, anyway, that's... I really don't. But anyway, if it's about women working in groups, yes, women can work in groups if they're allowed to. And
right.
the other thing is about the women being jealous and competitive is because they have nothing. Mm-hmm. They're fighting for something that they don't have yet, and
yeah.
you have it, and I want it, rather than men who mm-hmm. have all the shit. It's like, you want a piece of this? Here, come get it. And the women are like, okay. It's like it's cruel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know?
Fighting over scraps.
Yeah, yeah. It's scraps. Like, and I say women, you know, you shouldn't fight over anything, because like with the Rock Girl thing, it's like, it's there are no bars on these cages. They're imaginary bars. We're all in cages, and they're imaginary bars, and people have to start waking up to that, whether you're in music or just in life, you know, that there are no restrictions. There are no limitations for what you can do. And, you know, yeah, women should, you know, obviously get together more and do more important things like that, you know.
Allison, so what was your experience with Rock Camp for Girls? And, you know, as someone who was seminal to the formation of these ideas with Riot Girl, and then... I mean, there was a time when Riot Girl was really fell apart, and I think was really put down, you know? I mean, I was also involved in Riot Girl in New York, and I know it was something that people sort of, that looked, made fun of at a certain point. And now I think it's really valued with the punk singer, the documentary about Kathleen Hanna circulating, and with Pussy Riot and Girls Rock Camp. How does that feel for you, and why do you think it's finally coming around, and how can we keep it going this time?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Riot Girl kind of ate itself back in the day, and that was like from external and internal forces. But I think I totally agree with what Exene said. Is like, I think anytime you have like a group of marginalized people who have never been really had their voices heard or don't feel like there's enough, I guess they haven't been taught to feel like there's enough room or space or whatever for them, and they are fighting over that one little crumb or something, and it is hard to step outside of that and look and say, look, this is what that is. So there would be a lot of infighting and things like that, and in all-girl bands and all this. But also you have all these smart, opinionated women, like, in a tight, small space, and we all just want to be heard and talk over each other and whatever. But also I think we would take things a lot more seriously. Right. And so some kind of slight or whatever would go run deep.
Right, right.
And
you had the glare of the media spotlight come shining very quickly on something that was still being formed.
Yeah.
I think that was hard.
Yeah, and we didn't have a real plan. We didn't all know exactly what we were doing, and we certainly didn't mean for it to go that public. And, I mean, it meant the world to us, but we didn't think that, oh, this should be spread all over the world in our exact way and with our exact words. And I think the media kind of came in and watered it down, defanged, declawed it, and kind of turned it into a fashion statement or something and made us look silly and stupid. And maybe we helped make ourselves look stupid, I don't know. But... yeah, it sort of sucked. By the end of the 90s, it was like a joke. Mm-hmm. And everybody, even Riot Girls, were making fun of each other and themselves. And it's like, okay, whatever. But there's a lot worse stuff out there. So, and that's kind of what we saw with the late 90s. I tried to reconnect and regain some of that networking and some of that spirit with Ladyfest, which was... a nonprofit, like women by women for about, I don't know, a festival put on by women with women performing. And that was pretty cool. There was a lot of infighting in that too, though.
Right, right. And that was in Olympia. And then.
And many other places too.
Right, started in Olympia, but right. And actually, there was a Ladyfest here, but it was totally separate from what you were doing. But recently, there was one in El Segundo. Yeah.
But that's cool. I mean, I think it's important for people to just take it and run with it and make it speak to them and use their own terms and their own resources and whatever and just see what they can do. And it doesn't have to be in my vision or Kathleen's vision or whoever's. I think Rock Camp for Girls is kind of the most logical conclusion, and that's a way that you can inspire a younger generation.
Right.
I don't know. But also be part of it and feel inspired by watching them.
So. Yeah, because they have the chance now to not become sex objects, to not become cheerleaders, to not be the girlfriend of the guitar player, to not work a day job and a night job to pay for some guy's amp and his van so he can go on tour, to not become strippers to pay for some guy's amp so he can go on tour. And that is like the best part of this whole thing is that... that's when you need if everybody in this country or in this world decided to mentor one young person, any young person, it was a random thing, like here's your person, and we could change the course of history. We could try to limit some of this damage that's only going to start getting worse with young people. They all, you know, it's just terrible. And so, and you know what, it's funny because it's like, I'm not a segregationist. And when I think of feminism, I think it benefits everyone if it's real good feminism. It's like for men and women, whatever. But you have to keep those girls safe. You couldn't have a rock, you know, there is that school of rock, which is also really great. But to have those girls feeling safe, that they can go to the bathroom and that they can like come back and that they can talk to somebody if they're feeling weird or they whatever it is, women need to feel safe and girls need to feel safe. And if you can do that even for a week of their lives, then you create a force. Because as you know, with all groups, we were saying like groups that are marginalized or perceive themselves to be marginalized, they only need like if any of you have been, which you're probably here because you are or have been, you have that one school teacher that changed the course of your entire life by saying, you're really smart. And you never heard that in your life. You're never going to hear it again because you're a kid that no one's going to say that to. Women, especially girls, respond to that like crazy. You give one little tiny bit of self-esteem to a girl, it goes really far. With a boy, I think because of society, I'm not saying inherently sexually or anything, but with a boy, it's like, hey, you're really good at basketball. I know. It's like with a girl, be like, I am?
Right.
Thank you. You know, so that is very important. I'm sorry that that's the reality. I'm not painting it that way. I mean, I'm, you know, old enough to know that that's the reality, and I think it's getting worse. So anyway, yeah.
Allison, before you sort of mentioned that how it's easier now for young women to sort of get their message out there, get their music out there, you know, with the internet, YouTube, or a blog, or, you know, whatever. Are there, you know, and I think, like, having fanzines and having small record labels and having clubs and having a scene were all, that was the whole, like, medium for doing it yourself, for DIY, mm-hmm. right? And that became very important to punk and for feminists. So are there young women coming out of those online that we should know more about, or why isn't there more of that, or do we just not know about it because mm-hmm. we're too old?
Sometimes I wonder that, like, because I do still go out there, I go to shows, I try to keep engaged with what's going on, but I also, like, I don't necessarily know, and mm-hmm. so I don't want to be the one to say, oh, well, it all sucks now, but because I don't know, but there is some cool stuff I see, and really cool, cohesive, like, DIY scenes of people supporting each other and fun stuff, and I think that people, with the internet, people do have a lot more access to history, their own history, mm-hmm. that they might not have had before, and so that is really cool. I do meet a lot of younger girls who are, like, telling me all about the bands that I had to work really hard to find out about. And they'll just, with one click, they're like, well, and what about this and that and that? And I'm like, how do you know?
They're going to the public library site. Just like Maureen did.
But it blows me away what they know about and what they have access to. And so I think, and also with the rock camps for girls, I think it does kind of help. People are playing, girls are playing instruments much younger. And, mm-hmm. Starting bands a lot earlier. I mean, I was a late bloomer compared to all this. I mean, I didn't start a band until I was 19 or 20 or so. I don't know. So I don't know. I think it's pretty cool. The only thing that I kind of see lacking is a politicization, like, in the lyrics, which is just something that's really mm-hmm. important to me. And that, especially given the economy and 8 years of Bush and all this stuff that happened, 9/11, whatever, wars and everything. I just cannot believe that music and bands aren't more politicized. That blows me away. And so I find that's kind of lacking in most of the bands I hear. But musically, they all sound pretty great. Or a lot of the underground bands sound great.
Right.
There's a band that I worked with from Oklahoma City that was two girls, sisters, 10 and 15 years old. They're old, you know, 13 and 17 now. I did a record with them. They're called Skating Polly. And they're just two girls from Oklahoma City. And I saw them when they came to L.A. and played recently. And they were playing with other bands, like a band from Denver that also had young women in it. And I think it's back to the punk days where it's like, it doesn't matter if you're a boy or a girl anymore to mm-hmm. kids that are smart kids that want to just do stuff that isn't commercial. So I think that's starting up pretty good with kids. But, yeah, they're out there. They're definitely out there. So.
Right, because, I mean, I would think, you know, I think of the internet as being a way of getting around. You don't need a Kim Fowley anymore. You don't need Mercury Records to, you know, tell you that you have to have a cute singer up front that, you know.
Yeah. Oh, but you know.
But
here's the thing. when you know, Disney, the Mouseketeers. Does anyone here know who Annette Funicello is? Okay.
Yeah.
It was told to me that the reason kids ran home from school to watch that show was because she had breasts. And what they did is they put her in that pointy little bra. She looked like she was 30 on that show, too. It was odd, right? And so that was the first sex object on TV for little kids. Tailor-made, manufactured, without saying, this. She's on here because she has breasts. She's, I'm Annette. And it was like, she has breasts. And this was like late 50s, early 60s, right? Mm-hmm. Now you got Selena Gomez, who is a Disney creature, who gets her 18th birthday party hugely all over the world. Look, she's 18. Look, she's 18. Look, she's 18. Look, she's 18. And that pedophilia is permeating every aspect of our lives, and it's getting lower, and the ages are getting lower and lower. And that's the scary part to me, is to get to these girls before they get, like, even like that age, 16. Look at Miley Cyrus. I mean, these people, I mean, and all these girls are emulating that, and they're so screwed if they do. You know. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, as you were saying before, I think it's sort of it's like with light bulbs. There's a planned obsolescence to pop stars today. Like they're only supposed to last a few years, mm-hmm. and then you know we sacrifice them for the good of our culture, and they're destroyed.
Yeah,
and,
they are destroyed immediately. Yeah,
and we set it up so that they destroy themselves. Like they self-immolate.
Well, it's like the Judy Garland story, really. You know,
right. Right.
It's always the same thing. Like I said, there's always every generation has to do the same crap over and over. It's like we don't get to build on anything or what?
So how do we change that?
Well, we have. I mean, like just talking about this out loud is great because we just made the connection. There's punk rock and there's Sister Rosetta Tharpe and there's Riot Girl and there's Girls Rock Camp and there's all these women trying to do stuff. And it is happening and the internet does facilitate that. But I think that, yeah, I think it's important to remember that the children, male or female, or any configuration, really do need that protection and that self-esteem or the future is just ruined. And that's any culture in any time in history, you know, that's going to be true. So, right. And, you know, with the education system and all that, I mean, you know, we're in a rough spot. So anyone we can help is good and, you know. Definitely.
I actually am at Loyola Marymount. I teach a Revolution Girl style course, which Allison has come and spoken to, and it's for first semester students, and of course it was all women. It was taught for the first time this fall, and I was teaching them about X and teaching them about Riot Girl and Pussy Riot, and they all at the end of the year had to make their own fanzines, and it was really actually incredible to sort of see them discovering themselves and all the things that would happen at Riot Girl meetings where people talk about abuse and eating disorders and racism and all the things that they've experienced actually came up in this class. It was really, really amazing. So that's part of my effort to try to keep the flame alive as well as write books like this. And I wanted, you've mentioned Sister Rosetta Tharpe a couple times. There's actually a great biography of her by a writer named Gail Wald. So that would also be a great starting point for everyone to not have to keep reinventing the wheel. And I really want to get this book into Lorde's hands and Miley Cyrus's hands. And that was really one of like the things is to show young girls so that they maybe don't have to go through what the Runaways went through. And you know, hopefully 30 years later, they wouldn't have to 40 years later. So. I will turn it over to you for questions for about 20 minutes or so if people have questions. And then Exene will sing. So we have some microphones. Unless, is there anything else you want to say before we...
No, I'd like to hear what everyone else wants to say. Okay.
Exene, I thought that was really interesting what you said regarding how women don't get to build on themselves in history because it keeps disappearing. Why do you think that is, and what are the mechanisms by which this keeps happening, and is there anything that can be done about it?
Well, I think it's epidemic, really, in all our histories. I think that's what myth and religion and everything is. You know, it's like erase the past. Just, you know, you learn as you get older. I'm going to be 58 next month. That they're going to destroy everything I grew up with. And they do that for everybody every time. This is a long-term plan. It's not just like just women. It's everybody. But with women, I think it's harder because they're not taken seriously still. You know, they're marginalized. And they're still sex objects. They are still sex objects primarily. And not breeders anymore. Sex objects. And so I think it gets erased because the people in power want it to be erased. And so it's another extra thing we have to do besides everything else is to, okay, now I got to do that. On top of that, I got to be a historian. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, I really don't want to play benefits. Every time I play a show has to be a benefit because everybody needs help. Mm-hmm. Who said musicians are supposed to raise money for animals and people and organizations and food kitchen. I don't mind doing it, but you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think it's a plan to erase history. Yes, to make people feel worthless and have to reinvent. Every generation has to suddenly have worth out of nowhere. You know, so what am I? So it's part of the deliberate confusion matrix, you know, and I think the thing to do again is you have to pick people to mentor, and you have to show people stuff, and you have to realize that every young kid just wants to hear, you are so incredible, you are so loved, you are so worthwhile, you know, you are so talented, you are so great, you are such a good person. That's all they need. And if you can do that, then you stop that progress of that, I think, to some extent.
Yeah. Over there,
microphone person.
Allison, you said that as soon as the media kind of caught wind of the Riot Girl thing, it defanged and diluted it. But I know before that you had a chance to grow fangs and kind of distill your message. But nowadays it seems as soon as somebody has an interesting idea, like there's a Pitchfork showcase at South by Southwest, and and it's already a joke from the cool kids on social media. And I'm just wondering, like, do you think that, I guess, in the omnipresence of social media and music media, that is it possible to like grow fangs and be dangerous still in music and in this kind of overcovered world we live in?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I avoid Pitchfork because I hate it. But, I mean, they really annoy me. But anyways.
Me too.
So, and Vice Magazine, all this stuff. You know, I'm just like, yeah, whatever. But, and you're right. And because it's belittling to people, usually. Usually the articles are pretty belittling. And it's like, why? Well, why do we need to do that? But I think you have to work pretty hard to try to make something significant and important and kind of stand out. But I look at people like Pussy Riot. I mean, that's the punkest thing I've seen in a long time. And they're working it. They're working the media now that they're out of jail. They know what their message is. They're very clear. They haven't wavered, and they keep saying it. And they're really smart. I feel like they're kind of what I wish Riot Girl could have become or been if we had been more organized and more on point or something, or I don't know. So I think if you have real goals and desires and it's truly kind of revolutionary or it's truly like fucking with the system, then yeah, it will speak for itself. I don't know. I don't know if it's just with music. I mean, what interests me about Pussy Riot too is that it's also it's kind of performance art, music,
guerrilla theater. Yeah,
it's not just this one thing, and I think that's probably important too, to have it be more than just one thing. I don't know. There's some bands I like. I like this band, Crazy Band. I don't know if they're very politicized, but they're just kind of wild and crazy when they play.
Maxine, you spoke earlier about the inclusiveness of the punk scene. The music business of the 60s and 70s struck me as being rather sexist for all its ostensible free-spiritedness. And just as the punk aesthetic in a lot of ways was a reaction to the corporatization of of music at that point, do you think of the inclusiveness of gender and culture was similarly a reaction to the sort of sexism in the industry?
Well, yeah, because the people in power are always going to use sexism and racism against us. Because if they can keep us divided, all the better. I mean, think about it. You know, how do you create a fucked up world? Well, you figure out how to make everybody hate each other. What do you do? You split it in half. How do you make sure everybody knows who their enemy is? Pick something easily identifiable. Okay, men versus women, that does it. Done. That's it. That's all we needed. And that's what major religions preach. And that's what the people in power do. They try to get everybody to hate each other, you know. And that's what great revolutionaries attack, is that we are united. If we keep fighting each other, we end up with nothing. If we fight them, we end up with everything. But we just can't seem to stop fighting with each other. So this is our part of that battle here, is to do the women part. You know, everybody has their role, you know, whether it's gender or whatever, to try to unite people. And that's why I don't like that we have to do this at all, and I'm sure none of us do. Why do we have to talk about women in music as if it's like this freak show thing, you know, or this great thing? Right. Why can't it just be music with people? But it isn't, so you have to. So, yeah, you have to fight back constantly still.
Right. Yeah, I had a conversation with my agent yesterday. She's like, so are there any women you want to write books about? And I'm like, does it have to be a book about a woman? I'm not only, you know, I want to write the Lou Reed biography. Like, why, or how come only the men are getting those gigs, you know?
Yeah.
As much as I want to support women like this and spread their message, and it is something that I'm really drawn to, it's not
the box that I want to be stuck in.
Well, I hear that Betty Crocker, they're looking for somebody to write her biography. Maybe you could do that. You know. But then I did hear that she wasn't really a real person. So, I don't know. It's funny now.
Go ahead.
Hi. So I have been involved in rock and roll camp as both a camper and a volunteer. So I have a question. Do you think that this type of environment, because there are rock camps all over the country, do you think they're creating a consciousness with women in music that will eventually change the sort of culture you're talking about having to start over again? So with this conversation about feminism and women in music, do you think that it's eventually changing with this new generation coming up and artists like Lorde being constantly talk about their feminist views? So kind of what are your views on this changing young generation?
You would be the person to answer that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
It's up to you. It's your world now. It's, you know, I'm, like I said, I'm going to be 58 next month, and I think that when I see you, I'm so happy because you're asking that question because you know that that has to be what happens, I think. Mm-hmm. And consciousness is the key, raising, yeah. I think, you know.
Well, also, I just want to say there is something that predates Rock and Roll Camp, Rock and Roll Camp for Girls, that I think was modeled a bit after this rock and roll high school thing that was happening in Melbourne, Australia.
Yeah.
And there were these women who were having an after-school programs for only for girls in Melbourne, teaching them instruments and all this stuff. And now you see all of the graduates of that, or girls who went to that, and they are in all the bands now there. And I visited there several times, and I've not the camp, but just Melbourne, and I can see it in the scene. It's everywhere. There are girls in every band, and they don't even think anything about gender, and it's pretty awesome. And so I saw that direct result, and so I'm hoping there's something like this here. I mean, it seems like it would be happening here too, but it's a bigger population.
I guess it's the idea of normalizing women, you know, like letting them in, like just into the society, and you let them in.
And I do want to say that the interesting thing about Joan Jett is that I felt like she acted like a little bit of a mentor towards people like you, and definitely did for Bratmobile also. And now, you know, Girl in a Coma, it's this fantastic all-girl rock band from Texas that's on Blackheart Records. So there are, you know, women, she's been doing this for a while, I think.
Yeah, and she's also, not only was she an inspiration to a lot of us, but she's directly, like, connected to us. She's supportive. I mean, she's, like, standing on stage at our shows and going, yeah. And I mean, I've never seen someone so supportive of women in rock, and it's awesome.
So Beyonce's album that came out in December was, there's a lot of controversy with that, whether it's like one of the most contemporary feminist albums, especially to come out in 2013, the way she owns her sexuality and her own sexual desire as a woman and empowering it in that way. What are your views on that? And do you feel like she's kind of, if she is empowering herself as a woman and showing her by showing her sexual desire and her sexuality, or is she kind of not sending, like...
Oh, you're talking about Mrs. Carter. Yeah. You know, she got the richest, baddest ass guy, you know, and she and the two of them together, you can't be stopped. No, I don't see any value in anything that she does, because I think what she does is she... I'm not talking about her as a singer, because I've never heard her sing except the national anthem at the swearing-in, the failed swearing-in for the second time of that guy. But the thing is, I think that she's sending a message of I'm the most beautiful woman in the world. I've got this great guy who's really rich, and he's also like this hot, you know, important guy. We're really, really wealthy, and we can go to Cuba, and we can hang out with Obama and his wife, and we're elites, and I wear these $800,000 diamonds, and these, you know, what are those earrings she wore for the swearing in with the emeralds or whatever. Then everyone had to go out and get imitation ones. And it's like, it's the same thing as for me as the Academy Awards. I see people where, you know, they're showing up in $8 million worth of diamonds, and we're supposed to look up to them and think, wow, I wish I could be that person. I wish I could have $8 million worth of diamonds and be a movie star and be beautiful and be perfect and get to be blah, 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 blah. And I think that is the worst thing you can possibly tell people, because by the time you're conscious, you realize that you can't ever have that, and therefore you're nothing. Mm-hmm. Because there's a stratification in our society that didn't exist before. You talk about Brenda Lee, or you talk about the Supremes, or you talk about any other women bands, they weren't multimillionaires that everybody was like trying to like have sex with or be. They were just singers. And I think singing is great, but I don't think it should be elevated. The celebrity worship thing is going to destroy us. Yeah. And I think she's the culprit of all. And and I've said this my whole life. And you said that quote you started with the Runaways, you know. I mean, I thought Madonna was bad, and then now look, you know. So no, I don't think trading, and it's like Camille Paglia's version of feminism is act like a guy. And problem solved. You know, be a slut, you know, like, you know, do whatever you want to do. Just, you know, be a wanton sexual instrument, and you now have value. Problem solved, now you're rich. Isn't that it? I mean, isn't that life for everybody in this country? Is you have to become that or you're nothing. Because people are getting poorer and poorer and poorer. It's the lottery. It's like what they call the genetic lottery or whatever. It's like be an athlete, be a rap star, be a slut. You know, those are your options. Otherwise, you're worthless. I'm sorry, but that's what they portray to me. Now, that's just my opinion. I know a lot of people look up to, you know, Miley Cyrus even, you know, because they feel that she's making a strong statement because she's naked. I really don't get it with that. You know, I really don't.
I like Beyoncé more than Xine does.
But I agree. I mean, it's, in a way, it's sort of like, what's the point? I mean, yeah, she's fine, and the kind of feminist, not feminist conversation, I guess, could be mildly interesting. But in a way, it's like, I'm certainly not going to be the one to tell a woman or say that a certain woman is or isn't feminist. It's not up to me, first of all. But also, it's just like, for me, this is so much more about class.
Right.
And it's so, yeah, it's so insanely classist, and we're so divided by that.
It's great. If she could exist.
Who cares? She's corporate. Who cares?
If she could exist there and all those women could exist there, that'd be fantastic. If all the other women could also exist, coincide, you know, if there were multi-layers in our culture welcoming different types of women and different types of artists and music, then she could be whatever she wants to be.
Right.
But the thing is, that's to everyone's exclusion that she can exist. All these women that I was mentioning, they are allowed to do what they do because they fill that role that manufactured culture wants, that corporate culture wants, and they want to brainwash all the girls and all the kids into thinking that that's what they should become. That's it. That's what they should aspire to. And then there's no room for women with an alternative view. I mean, that's the problem. Not that she should do whatever the fuck she wants. I don't give a fuck what she does. But I don't like it that it's crammed in everyone's throat. That's it. That's it. Past that, there's nothing. And that's not cool.
Another question? Xine, and being a person who I feel like just obviously gets it, I feel like you see the transparency of how people keep dividing themselves continually. Do you, and how is it, that you maintain an earnest sense of hope for the future? Like, aside from, I mean, like, the rock camp is an amazing positive thing, and the wonderful positive reinforcements that you're saying to say to children and to encourage them, those are, but do you genuinely have a hope? Because these fuckers keep fighting over and over again and separating themselves over and over again, and it's so obvious to some people, and I feel like you've got this wealth of experience, and I wonder, do you have and maintain an earnest hope?
Yeah, well, I had a vision that the punk rock thing and a lot of other things were going to revolutionize the world, and especially this country, save the world. I read, the best quote I have on that is by Dr. Martin Luther King, which was, even if I knew the world was going to end tomorrow, I would still plant a tree. That's very 60s. Mm-hmm. But here's my version. Even though I know the world is going to end tomorrow, I'm still going to plant a fucking tree. Because, you know, because that is the only attitude you can have in this world. And I'm telling you, 90% of the world has it much worse than we do here. And we're about to find out what that feels like. And so, you know, you have to be tough and you have to keep going because, like, if you have kids, you know, single moms or dads or whatever, and you don't have much money, you know that you have to keep going day after day. It's just the way life is. And if you can do it with a sense of humor, then you're okay. Then you're going to graduate off this planet and go somewhere else and you'll be fine. But if you, yeah.
Okay.
When you interviewed Joan Jett, what did she say about Miley Cyrus and Miley Cyrus's actions?
Right. Okay. So I interviewed Joan recently with her album that came out, and it was shortly after the VMAs incident. And Miley and Joan had performed together on the Oprah Winfrey Show a few years ago. Miley is a huge Joan Jett fan and Runaways fan, and actually does Runaways medley in her live shows, or has. So that's, I don't really think that it's that a great idea to go around asking women what they think of other women. I just want to sort of preface, that's why I'm prefacing why I asked her that question, because I knew that they had a relationship, and that to a certain degree, Miley's someone that Joan has mentored in this chain. And she, in her Joan way, was very politic about what she said, and basically said, "Well, I'm not sure if she really conveyed what she was trying to convey. I don't know. I haven't talked to her about it. My concern is that nobody's talking about the music, and that's sort of my answer to the Beyoncé question is too. Is like." Well, you know, I don't hate Beyoncé. I think she's can be a great dancer and really funny, and I like her voice. But I have no desire to go out and buy that album whatsoever. I'll go buy the Janelle Monáe album before I'll go buy the Beyoncé album. So that was actually when Tammy Faye Starlett is this great singer in New York, does different impersonations of really tributes to the Runaways and Nico, and she after the Miley. Incident blog something I like Miley's voice, like nobody talks about that. What about how Miley actually sings? So that was sort of Joan's take too.
Excuse me.
I think we have one last question.
There's been a lot of talk tonight about people breaking ground for women in music, and there's three names that I haven't heard at all. That there's a very good book here available in this library called Girls Like Us by Sheila Weiler, I believe. Mm-hmm. And the people that she picked were Carole King, Joni Mitchell, and Carly Simon. And I'm wondering if these women had any effect on you at all.
Well, of course. And, of course, there's Carole K from The Wrecking Crew, the only woman in The Wrecking Crew, a musician. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are, you know what, and that's great that you brought that up, because there are so many women. In the 60s, there were so many women, Janis Joplin and, Fleetwood Mac and Linda
Aretha
Ronstadt.
Franklin.
Yeah, I mean, Aretha Franklin, yeah. And it's good you brought it up, because there are a lot of great women who have written a bunch of amazing songs and done amazing things. And Joan Baez, of course, all these women, for sure. But they were kind of... more as individuals. I mean, they worked within groups, songwriters or the 60s, whoever you want to group them. They are like icons, but definitely. Definitely, you're
but
right.
But they weren't punk.
Well, they were in a way,
Right, right.
I mean, Carole K was so punk with those glasses, and she's just sitting there, so what do you want me to do? Like, the boots are made for walking, we need a beginning, all right. Boom, boom, right. Like that kind of stuff, And yeah. Good, because they were having trouble funding it, which is sad. Good.
A movie about Carole K?
Oh, it's about the Wrecking Crew, the people that played all the music and all those hits in the 60s that nobody's ever heard of. Glenn Campbell was in it, and Carole K, and some other people. A lot of people.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. For we're not over.
You want to sing a song?
Yes.
Now? Okay.
Exene is going to sing a song.
All right, I'm going to sing a song.
Awesome.
Something I don't do much these days. And this song is appropriate.
Really, it's a true story. All my songs are true stories. And I wrote it in like half an hour, about 2 years ago. And one time someone asked me in an interview, what advice would you give girls who are just starting out in music? And without thinking, I said, don't get married. And they said, why? Well,
So this song is called, there's a lot of reasons, but this song is called I Sold My Wedding Ring Today. All right. I got to plug it in. I forget I'm not mic'd. Hang on. I'm too short for this. Lily Tomlin, now that's another one to mention, right?
Yeah.
What a great woman, right? Okay. There we go. Ready? I sold my wedding ring today to a pawn shop. I didn't get very much. I put gas in the car. That money didn't go far. Just wanted to get rid of it. I hope nobody buys it, 'cause it wasn't very lucky, or just maybe. You never loved me. He said, I do, and then he didn't. You, then he wouldn't. I tried to leave. He said you shouldn't, but I left anyway. I sold my wedding ring today. I wasn't married very long. I found out early on rings slip off easily. At least yours did. Frequently. I wonder who will wear it next. I wish her only happiness. I hope she doesn't have to buy it for herself like I did. He said, I do, and then he didn't. He said, I love you, then he wouldn't. I tried to leave, he said you shouldn't. But I laughed anyway, I sold my wedding ring today. I laughed anyway, I sold my wedding ring today. Thank you.
Thank you, Essene. Thank you, Allison. Thank all of you. I like that that's the first time all night that we've talked about men or relationships also, which is kind of a great thing. So thank you all for coming. We'll be out in the reception.
Hang out.
Aloud is made possible through support provided by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the National Endowment for the Arts, and Errant Fox. Additional support provided by the Los Angeles Public Library, the Stay Home and Read a Book Ball, and individual Library Foundation members. Media support is provided by LA Weekly, KCRW 89.9 FM, and KUSC 91.5 FM.